This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatto. A little bit later in the hour, we'll be talking about development, wilderness, and human-wildlife encounters. But first, have you been following the recent news about how researchers were able to teach monkeys to move a robotic arm merely by thinking about it? Yeah, it's very interesting. The research was published in this month's issue of the new journal Public Library of Science Biology. And the study's lead author is here to talk about it and to consider the question, if monkeys can control a machine with their minds, can we humans do it too? Our number, 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Miguel Nicolelis is a professor of neurobiology and the co-director of the Center for Neuroengineering at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina. He joins us today from the campus there. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
Walk us through the steps of how. What did you do? You taught a monkey how to control a robotic arm. How did you do that?
Well, basically, what we did was to develop a method to sample large-scale brain activity as these animals were learning to play a video game by using first a joystick. And as the animals learn and make the accurate hand movements to play the video game, We recorded this large electrical activity coming from their brains, and through a series of computer models, we are able to learn how to extract the basic motor parameters, motor commands that these brain cells were producing in order for the animal to produce hand and arm movements. And in a given moment in time, we basically disconnected the joystick from the computer that the animal was using to play the video game, and from there on, basically, the animal learned that he could basically imagine the movements that he was required to make, and our computer programs could actually extract these motor commands and send it to a robotic arm that was now in charge of actually playing the game.
How long did it take the monkey to know that he could move it with his brain instead of his arm?
Well, it took a few weeks for this transition to occur, mm-hmm. but when the animal actually got the kick out of the game, it took just a few hours for them to realize that they could actually stop moving their arms and continue to play successfully the video games.
Wow. And so these monkeys have these electrodes in their heads, and they can just think about it, and it moves a... You got to create a little computerized robot?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We have our brains, a few hundred milliseconds before we start moving, our brains are basically planning this motor behavior. They are planning all the aspects of these movements. And it's in that period that you can go there and sample these electrical signals and through computer programs extract what is necessary to reproduce the intentions, the motor intentions of the animals into a robotic device. Mm-hmm.
And so did you have to make a specially constructed robot arm to respond to the monkey signals?
No. This is a commercially available robotic arm. It's a very elaborate robotic arm, but we were able to translate the raw brain activity into commands that this robot arm can operate.
And how many different kinds of things can the arm do?
Well, the arm can reach for different locations, it can create elaborate wrist movements, and it can grasp, grip objects.
And the monkey can do all those with the arm?
Yes.
Wow.
The monkey was able to play these virtual games. You know, it's like any video game that we all play.
Right.
And they require the animal to track a target on the screen, and once he reached that target, grab the target, like if the target had weight. So he had to produce gripping force that was enough to hold to that target for a few hundred milliseconds.
Any way to get fine finger movement, moment, precision grip out of this
way? Yeah, we are now working on elaborating fine finger movements, of course. This is a one degree of freedom. Is a hand that grabs and squeezes an object. So you can instruct the animal to produce different levels of force or gripping force. And it can be very delicate. So we are now trying to learn more about how we could get more out of this hand in terms of more degrees of freedom, more fingers, let's say.
So you must have figured out how many different little signals it takes to do these things from the brain.
Can you give us an idea
of how many the signals? Is it 5? Is it 10? Is it 1,000? Is it 1,000,000? 1,000,000,000?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question because there are millions of cells that define a motor circuit. And there are many areas of the brain that work in parallel together to generate these commands. Yet, we were sampling just a few hundred neurons from a few of these areas, not even all of them. And for these types of movements, we are able to extract enough information from these hundreds of cells simultaneously to control these movements. So there is a very interesting issue of how much is necessary from this whole circuit to produce the elaborate movements that that we normally make. And we are actively researching that question. It's still up for a debate. Certainly, we could achieve a lot of stuff with about 300 neurons. But there's a lot more that we need to learn.
Mm-hmm. But did the monkeys' brains actually work differently when they were physically controlling a joystick than when they were just thinking about it?
Yeah, what we saw is that as the animal is learning to switch from moving their own arms and controlling the robotic arm, there are some properties that are changing, some physiological properties of the brain that are changing. And our interpretation is that the brain, since the brain is getting feedback, is getting visual feedback from the performance of the robot on the screen, so the animal can see how well the robotic arm is performing, this visual signal may be training the brain to incorporate the properties of this robotic device into the neuronal tissue that normally controls the animal's own arm. So our interpretation, our hypothesis, is that as the animal became proficient in operating the robotic arm without moving, it was almost as if the robotic arm had been incorporated into the body representation that the animal has in the brain.
Did the animal forget it had a real arm at any point?
Well, I don't know if he forgot it. He could switch back and forth. He could, for long periods of time, control the robotic arm, play the game without moving its own arms. And when we asked the animal to go back, he would readily go back and use his arms to play the game.
All right, let's go to the $64 question that everybody's asking. What is it? What am I going to ask you? How soon can people, right? How soon are people going to be tested? Or I'm sure you'll have a waiting list of people who want to have something like
well,
this.
Well, yeah, we don't have a waiting list at this moment. We are actually doing some preliminary clinical studies. Because, of course, we are also very interested in trying to translate this technology to the clinical arena. And as a, you know, I'm a physician by training, so this is a dream of my entire life to be able to make some contribution to the treatment of people that suffer from severe paralysis. I'm cautiously optimistic at this point. I think we can think about the next 2 or 3 years as a very intense period of work that may give us very interesting results in the clinical arena. So that's the time span that I'm considering as vital for this translation from this basic science work to clinical applications.
Do you have to get okay to go ahead to do this on people?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yes, we have to go through a clear process through the FDA and other regulatory agencies, and that's what we are going to do, of course. Yeah.
And I imagine you've started that.
Yes, we're starting that. Yeah.
Let's see if I get a phone call in 1-800-989-8255. Let's go to Candy in Tulsa. Hi, Candy.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Just was curious as to, you know, what the ramifications were for people with spinal cord injuries, and you pretty much answered my question. I thought that's what this might be about.
Yeah. Dr. Nicolelis, so more or less said that. Would spinal cord injuries be the first place you would look for?
Exactly. That for severe spinal cord injuries, like high cervical spinal cord injuries, in which the patient is severely paralyzed from the neck down, that's one of the possibilities that one of the clinical applications that we are more focused on, the possibility of restoring upper limb mobility using a robotic arm or other artificial devices by bypassing the lesion. Mm-hmm. And using the signals directly from the motor cortex that is viable, perfectly viable in these patients, to enact the patient's intention to move using a device, an artificial device. I think that's one of the main areas that we'll be looking at.
Dr. Nicolelis, thank you. Good luck to you. Thanks for joining us this hour.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Dr. Miguel Nicolelis, Professor of Neurobiology and Co-Director of the Center for Neuroengineering at Duke University in Durham, North Carolina.